Welcome to the Dialogues Podcast, brought to you by the Center for Asian American Christianity at Princeton Theological Seminary. This podcast features the voices of Asian American scholars, ministry leaders, and activists in an ongoing dialogue about theology and ministry. We provide Asian American ministry leaders with a forum for dialogue, support, and critical reflection on ministry by Asian Americans, especially in Asian American ecclesial contexts.
It is my great delight to introduce our first plenary speaker. Jessica Chenfang, PhD, LMFT, is an associate professor of marriage and family therapy at Fuller Theological Seminary. With her years of clinical MFT experience, she consults with academic, healthcare, and church organizations to improve the well-being of people within their communities. Her research and clinical work center around social contextual intersections of race, gender, generation, trauma, and spirituality. Jessica has been shaped by multi-denominational faith contexts, Presbyterian, United Methodist, American Baptist, Adventist, Jesuit, and is grateful for the ways these traditions have shaped the contours and depths of her Christian faith. She resides in Upland, California with her spouse and two young children. Whenever she gets the chance, she loves reconnecting with her love for analog, so paper planners and stationery, baking, and sewing. Jessica, the floor is yours.
Good morning, everyone. Such an honor to be with all of you virtually and to see your faces there in that room. And I was tracking and seeing so many friends, pastors, colleagues, family members who are joining online. And so thank you. And David, what a beautiful introduction. As David was talking about the Heart Cellar Act and all these ways that our families, our elders, our ancestors have migrated to the U.S., each of our stories resides in all of that. And so let me share my screen here so that we can keep moving on. And I am going to be looking at my second screen here, just so that you know, as I look to my right. So this topic that we've selected and agreed upon for this plenary, honoring, owning, and integrating our Asian American identities, I've been practicing as an MFT, marriage and family therapist, for a number of years, and have largely worked with Asian American clients. And in my experience, what I've seen is that many of us, and this is myself included, have lived our lives with some degree of disintegration. And through this plenary, we'll talk about why that might have been, why that is, and why intergenerational wholeness, the hope of it, the vision of it, is connected to our ability to honor, own, and integrate all of who we are, all of who our families are. So I will begin with my own family's story. And I just sort of put these red dots in places that both my parents have traveled through. So both my parents were born and raised in Taiwan, the beautiful island of Taiwan. And my mom's family, this is because of the Heart Cellar Act, right? So in the 70s, that's when both of my parents migrated. And my mom's family went to Buenos Aires, Argentina, and then to New York, and then Seattle. I mean, all these different, for different reasons. And my dad, part of his family, he had many older siblings. One was in Michigan. His parents were in Tulsa, Oklahoma for a while. You know, long story short, my parents met in New York and got married there and then moved to the West Coast. And we were one of the only families on both sides to grow up in Southern California. I share this because a lot of us know that we might have a general family history, a trajectory of our migration story. But that might be it, like the why, right? And we'll talk a little bit later about how else we can think about our migration stories. But that is really, as David mentioned, the thing that brings our experiences together is that in addition to the ways that our families migrated, whether it's us ourselves, our parents, our grandparents, a previous generation, that migratory experience shapes life in the U.S. and it shapes church life too. Just a brief comment. This is my family, my husband and our two kids. I have characterized them by the foods that they enjoy. Our son loves boba. Our daughter loves gummy bears, anything gummy related, but just protecting their identities here. My husband also migrated from Taiwan. He was born and raised there. And one of the things that we've continued to learn about now in our 40s is that he has a 10 plus generational history in Taiwan, including, and I don't know if my brother-in-law is here, but recently learned that he has Aboriginal Taiwanese ancestry, right? So all of these things connected to the lands that our families have been a part of, we carry with us into this North American space. But as I mentioned, post-migration is where our current lives are. Many of us are thinking about life now, our nuclear families now. But what we have not maybe spent as much time thinking about is what was the context of migration, right? What was going on pre-migration? And because I was not born in Taiwan, I don't have a lot of connection to the land. A lot of what I carry are stories, books that I'm reading, have read. And I've, in the last few years, started to ask my parents more about what was life in Taiwan like? What my mom left as a teenager, right? I can't imagine myself being a high schooler and leaving my country of origin. What shaped her world and her emotional, relational connections? And one of the things that I think is grounded in our Asian American Christian experience, and these are such good things, which is this desire to striving toward what is good, whether it's in our Christian and spiritual walk. Sometimes it has a lot to do with what David mentioned, this model minority internalized, racialized identity of, okay, we're here to succeed, to do well. Let's keep pressing forward. And we have this, whether it's this Asian American dream that my parents explicitly or implicitly gave to me, I'm imagining that for life together. These are wonderful things, and this is not all of the wholeness we might be able to have. And what I wanted to introduce and bring into the conversation is the other part of all of who we are, which is encouraging us to be present, right? Sometimes that is being present with our hope, our dreams, and sometimes that's being present with the loss, the trauma, the pain. Sometimes it's important to press onward and keep persevering. Other times it's important, as God reminded his people, to remember what God has done. What is the legacy we've inherited over generations? Are those stories of God's faithfulness and our ancestors' persistence stories that we know and integrate into who we are? And sometimes while we hope for this fullness of life, we want to acknowledge the brokenness that is present in every family and every identity. And so my encouragement is, let's hold this both and together today. We explore some of these histories, some of these realities. And from my clinician perspective, our increased capacity to hold multiple things in tension, this allows us to develop who we are in the likeness of Christ for the sake of being integrated into our families and our communities. Parker Palmer is one of my favorite authors, and from his book, A Hidden Wholeness, The Journey Toward an Undivided Life, this is a quotation I thought was really fitting for our conversation today. Wholeness does not mean perfection. It means embracing brokenness as an integral part of life. And I think oftentimes, for all kinds of complex reasons, Asian Americans internalize perfection, the pursuit of perfection, as that's going to make me better and whole. And is it possible that wholeness is about being open to all of the parts of myself and my family's legacy, which includes the brokenness? And as I move in that direction, this is how I and we become more whole together. All right. So honoring, right? So we're talking first about honoring our Asian American identity. And there are so many ways we can understand and define honoring. And for today, this is how I'm inviting us to think about it. Knowing and seeing something for what it is. Knowing and seeing someone for who they are, right? And in today's conversation, we're going to look at migration, right? Honoring the migration story. What were the reasons for migration, the context and the effects of it? So I'm not going to read every one of these, and certainly this is not exhaustive, and David referenced a number of these, but each of our families has our reasons for migration. And in my own family, I would say it was a mix of, actually, like most of these, economic opportunity, political instability on the island of Taiwan, family reunification. My dad's older siblings were already across the U.S., for education, many things. And so I encourage us to explore these stories and to be curious about them. One of the side notes I wanted to mention is that this presentation I'm giving, I'm offering a lot of things that each of us can explore and be curious about. These are not meant to be clinical interventions that you should integrate and apply in your life, right? These are things that I hope that you'll think about, reflect, and it doesn't mean that today you need to call a grandparent or a relative and say, tell me about this, right? Each family situation and dynamic is unique. And so should we move toward exploring and having these dialogues, there are implications and it affects our family relationships. And so I just wanted to mention that. I'm not saying we all need to figure this out right now and today, but these are things for us to be curious about. Now, the piece about migration that is less talked about and understood is the context of it, right? Not just the why, but what was going on around the experience of migration. And like I mentioned, these are things that I've recently started to ask my parents. Physically, what was the experience like? Was there a toll it took on people's health and well-being? Was there stress involved, right? Did they come by plane, by boat, by other means? What were the relational components? Were there ruptures that happened? How did family that stayed in Taiwan feel about the departure? How did family feel that was already in the U.S., right? Were there tensions? Were there hopes? What was the emotional experience like for my mom? Leaving middle school as, you know, a top student in her grade, leaving that life and all of her hopes and dreams to become a physician in Taiwan like her father and to have that uprooted. What were the financial contexts, right? I know my parents came from very different means. And I learned this is a story my parents went through. This is a story my husband's family went through. But like in the process of migration, depending on and trusting people in the U.S. to bring you over, paying to help cover visa costs. And in that, both multiple families faced, a breach of trust, someone who stole their money. That happened to my mom's family. And so like losing a lot of money because of this hope of migration and then having a relational rupture, right? What were the political things going on? What were the spiritual realities and hopes? And so these are just questions I hope that you'll hold in your heart and be willing to be curious about in your own family histories. And lastly, this is a part where it overlaps a bit more with my clinical practice, which is what are those effects of migration, right? And there's a lot. This is often the stuff that is felt implicitly, but maybe we haven't had explicit conversation with family members about. For example, we know that a common experience is for people to have psychosomatic symptoms, right? from years of stress, years of caring and functioning with high cortisol levels. And so at this point, maybe it's a few years, it's a few decades since the migration experience, but there's a toll on our physical bodies, on our parents. And oftentimes for the sake of surviving, right, a disconnect from how our bodies feel. What has happened to families? Oftentimes there's a downward mobility. That's a term that we use. For example, my grandfather was a physician in Taiwan, but then he could not practice that when he came to the States, issues with passing board exams, the use of English language, right? Many families had to find other means to make life work in the US. And that shifted their sense of self, right? That self-identity piece, which is that last thing listed here. Another thing is values, right? What values came in the 70s when my parents migrated? Did those values get embedded in family life, held onto more tightly? And then did that shape the relationships being built here? Right. In the 70s and 80s, we did not have systems like Line or WeChat or iPhones to connect families transcontinentally. Right. We couldn't have phone calls easily. I still remember calling family with a phone card. Right. You have to input all these numbers and they cost all this money. So relationships were affected and there were ruptures and there were internalized shame and guilt, all these sorts of things, right? The spiritual effects of migration, there's so many things, but what I want to highlight is what my mom's family, I would identify as like fifth generation Taiwanese Presbyterian. And my mom's family came with those Presbyterian roots. And then when we become part of a Taiwanese church in the US, what I didn't learn until years later is that even our Asian American churches are really affected by white evangelicalism. And so even in our understanding of our Christian faith, it comes with implicit racialization that we may not be aware of. And so there's a different connection and understanding of God that shows up. And this is something I have not actually asked my mom or talked to her about yet. But I can see the effects of white evangelicalism on the shaping of Asian American faith and on ourselves, right? In my family, this would be on my parents' sense of self and how that gets translated to me. So one example is my mom really did want to go to medical school. And because her academic trajectory was sort of intervened and she could not pursue that, she had to learn Spanish in Argentina and then learn English when she came to the States. And so it was hard to pursue medicine with all of that change. And so she wanted that for me, right? This is not a very unique story, but in that her sense of self, I imagine my mom as a young person, the loss and the grief around that, and then the desire put onto me, right? And so thinking about your own family story, what are these reflection questions that might be helpful for you to consider, right? What precipitated your family's migration? What were those reasons? What was the context in your family's country of origin? What was their experience like? What was life like? What was felt? What was hoped for? What was encountered? What were the losses? What were the victories? What was the actual journey of migration like, right? I actually have not asked my mom this. Like, does she remember packing? Did she have to make decisions about what she could keep or what she had to let go of? What were the stories that were told about migration? What were the stories that have remained untold after all this time? How might it have affected our elders? And so I hope that you will but take some time to reflect on these questions and consider your own family's beautiful and resilient story of migration that shapes who you are today and the family that you're creating today too. So let's move on to talking about owning and integrating. And what do I mean by owning and integrating? And so what I mean is owning is this hope of saying, wow, this belongs to me. This belongs to us. This is part of who I am. This is our story. It shapes who I have been. It shapes who I am and the person I am becoming and want to become. And so in talking about owning and integrating, what I want to normalize is that there's a reluctance to own many parts of our stories sometimes. And this is often what brings people in to the therapy space. And then we'll talk about the process of doing this. And then what is the gift of owning and integrating? So I wanted to mention that it is our human nature to resist pain. Right? God created us this way. It is a form of resilience. It is a form of survival. Our brains are inclined to say, ouch, that hurts. Avoid it, right? It is how we continue to make it through the day, through the month and the year. And so there are ways that our own family's response might have shown some degree of reluctance, right? And as I talk about this reluctance, I hope that you will have empathy toward yourself, toward your family, toward our general Asian American experience, because it is normal for people, for example, I mean, David mentioned so many of our families leave legacies of war, right? Many different parts of the world today continue to live with war. Significant, unspeakable trauma is real, not just today, but in our families' histories. When that is part of our family's history, it is very valid to not want to talk about it, to not want to move toward it. Part of resilience is to repress it and to say, this is not something I want to be passing on to my children, right? A very normal thing for parents or grandparents to think or just implicitly realize is, this was so painful, I do not need and want to pass this on. And so I want to say that out loud because this is the legacy that many of us have inherited, that some of these stories were never told and for good reason. And I want to say that it is not necessarily like the right or best thing to go knock on our parents' or grandparents' door and say, tell me this story, right? They may have protected us from it for good reasons. And so be curious about that in your own heart, with people that you can trust, but not necessarily break down those walls, because there's a function for some people to have withheld those things, and it allows them to survive and be resilient in a new place. But that response is not without implication and unintended consequence, right? That does get passed on intergenerationally, and it can shape, for example, internalized symptoms of anxiety and depression, right? When some of that is unknown and remains unresolved, the brain has its own way of trying to resolve it, and it can show up in different types of symptoms. And so just wanted to speak to that. Another piece of reluctance comes through our journey of racialized survival, right? Oftentimes in our families, push to survive in the North American land is our phenotype means that we experience racism. In people's racial ignorance, our families experience all kinds of trauma related to our racial identities within the United States or in North America. And so in trying to survive, oftentimes that means we don't have the capacity to be reflecting on the past. And quite frankly, there's a degree of privilege and space. And I am centering sort of like second generation onward realities where many of our parents were trying to survive. And now that many of us, and I'll speak for myself, it's like being part of this middle class reality. I'm a professor, I'm a therapist, I go to my own therapy. Like I have the bandwidth to be reflecting about these things. But a first gen parent who was running a liquor store, trying to run a restaurant, whatever it might be, right, may not have the bandwidth to really think about these things because they are surviving in the U.S. And lastly, what I want to speak to is that we have a number of Christian discourses that add to this reluctance to own some of the trauma and the pain and the harder stories of our family's legacies. And this comes by way of, like I mentioned earlier, you know, press on toward the goal. Let's forget what's behind because it's painful, right? And oftentimes, Christian theology within the U.S. is disembodied. We are thinking about our future in heaven, this triumphal victory of Jesus. And we forget that there is a beautiful theology of the cross. And how do we explore that? And oftentimes, it's not that people don't want to. It's that the framework of North America and the influence of white evangelicalism does not align with the lived reality of many Asian American migration histories. And so how do we, you know, pastors who are here, theologians, those who are working in ministry, how do we understand more fully with this intergenerational perspective, a theology that is aligned with Asian American experience so that we're including all of these stories together? Now, the process of owning and integrating, I'm going to say this might be the most challenging piece for us, right? And I know a lot of times when you come to a plenary, we're all using our brains. Like we're thinking, we're figuring this out, we're being reflective on a cognitive level. But the process of moving toward owning and integrating, I want to invite us to think like this is really an embodied experience, which is why it can be very hard. As a side note, right, functioning in our brains and remaining cognitive is a really strong coping mechanism for many Asian Americans. And it is a way that we remain disconnected from our bodies and how our bodies feel, because it can feel hard to slow down enough to attend to our bodies and our relationships. Because when we do that, our anxiety might show up, our grief, our loss, right? We don't know what might show up. It might be scary. And so as I talk about this, I hope that we sit with ourselves and our families with a lot of compassion and grace. And so thinking, even as I'm sharing these things, are there people I can have these conversations with, people I love and trust? It could be a therapist, it could be a sibling, it could be a friend, it could be your pastor. But this process of moving toward owning and integrating our migration stories, our family's legacies, it requires us to slow down, right? And it's the capacity to hold the tension between past and present. Many times, I know therapists talk about this a little bit, that we think about the past and sometimes depressive symptoms remain there, right? We're feeling grief and we're sort of stuck or being held by a lot of the pain of the past. And anxiety pulls us into the future. We have all these hopes and dreams. We want to do this. We hope for that. But that energy pulling us toward the future, and the energy holding us in the past makes it really hard to be present in the moment and to attend to, oh, actually right now I feel tension in my neck and in my back and in my lower back, or my stomach is feeling really off, or I get headaches or migraines, right? And so it's this, we need courage to see and sit with pain and discomfort. And I know I'm sort of naming these things. This is not something that we could just do together today, and it's sort of like a completed process. What I will say, this is going to happen over the rest of our lives, and I speak for myself as well, that I am in my own life constantly having to remind myself, okay, you have all these things you're doing, these initiatives you're leading, this research you're writing. Let's slow down. Let me attend to my body. What do I need to sit with today, right? What in my striving, is there something that I'm neglecting, right? That makes it hard for me to show up for my children. That makes it hard for me to attend and be present with my spouse or my parents. And so the hope is that we can accept a multidimensional view of ourselves and others. What I mean by this is, oftentimes in being raised in the United States, our anticipation and expectation of what people should be like, what relationships would be like, it's informed through a white gaze. And many of you might be tracking the increase of Asian American stories represented in the media. It's a wonderful and beautiful thing that our family images are being shown in this public way. But a lot of us have grown up where that was not the case. The images of a nuclear family, typically a white family, and typically, for example, a lot of, let's say, physical expression and verbal expression of love, of validation, of affirmation. And so we've internalized an idea of like, oh, this is what it means to be a good mom or a good dad, right? And like, how come my parents don't do that? And this is sort of bringing together a number of cases. This is not one particular case, but have worked with a number of clients over the years who have truly struggled with seeing their parents, honoring their parents for who they are, because what they imagined a good parent is supposed to look like is to be able to have self-reflection. And there is this dream of a second-gen Asian American and their parents saying to them, oh, I'm so sorry that I hurt you. I was really, you know, traumatized by my own family issues and through this journey of migration. Will you forgive me? Right. I see a lot of laughter. But there's, even it might sound funny for some of us to say out loud, but that is a real internal like longing. And I will say, I'm having this emotion because I'm holding these countless stories of intergenerational pain, this longing for my parents to verbalize to me their love and their connection. And it's through this white lens of what a parent's supposed to look like. And so this accepting of who my parents are, their tragedies, their pain, their loss, what they've inherited, that leads to a certain boundary. Their capacities are limited, right? Can we see that? How do we move toward accepting, wow, this is who my mom is. This is who my dad is. These are their strengths, but these are their areas that they might grow in, but they may not be able to change that because of their context, right? And so when we move toward accepting this multidimensional view of who we are, who our parents are, who our elders are, who our pastors are, who our leaders are in the church, this is really powerful and deep, deep work. This is a little bit overlap with the last page here. But when we talk about the both and, what has been missing? And I've already referenced a number of these things, but just to make explicit, right, we can explore these stories of pain, loss, trauma, and grief. Every person, every family is different. There are some families that actually live out of these stories of pain, loss, trauma, and grief, whether explicitly, consciously, or unconsciously, right? And that pain characterizes family life. And for these families, I will say we need the courage to move toward this third thing here, which is what are personal family strengths and hopes? For a number of years, I worked primarily with physicians as clients and worked with a number of Asian American physicians. And one of my questions would be, tell me about some of your strengths. What are the ways that, you know, you've inherited strengths from your parents, your family? And it would just, the person would just draw a blank. And so depending on what we've inherited, the stories we've been told, the ways that our parents relate to us, we might highlight, consciously or not, these critical and negative stories, or we might only want to focus on the positive. These are all very valid coping mechanisms to survive, right? But we want to hold the both and. We want to move toward all of it and look at, yes, like there are these pieces that are really hard, and I'm curious about why my family never wanted to talk about this, or there's this part of the family story that's really unclear to me. Or, wow, like my parents, in order to survive, they had to point out what I needed to keep improving, right? And like a classic example in my family is, and this is my mother's way of helping us survive, studying hard. In high school and even in junior high, we'd be waiting at a Chinese restaurant to get seated, and my mom would bring out SAT vocab book and test us on vocabulary, right? And so I remember distinctly, it was not until like college and after college where I learned to pause and be present, because life was all about trying to survive. And I'm sure many of your parents have said this to you, which is, you will have to work harder than your white counterparts. You will have to survive differently than your white counterparts in order to get to XYZ, right? And so in that striving mentality and what we've internalized, is there a way that we can pause now, reflect on it, and really receive, like, yes, these are amazing ways that my mom and my dad, and my grandparents have taught me to be resilient. And what are the other stories I want to expand for myself as I'm raising my children, right? And so being able to recognize our personal and family limitations, this is so important. And it's hard because there is an Asian cultures, even for ourselves, even if we're not speaking it out loud to someone, thinking, quote unquote, a negative or critical thought about your own family feels dishonoring. It feels uncomfortable, right? And this is where I'm encouraging us. This is why, like, I'm not asking us to bypass or violate any sort of like internal value system that you have, but rather to hold, you know, in a private space with your siblings, with people that you trust, talk about your family's limitations, talking about, you know, your strengths, but also like, you know what, we did not get this from, you know, our parents. This made it really hard for us to, you know, fill in the blank, and that's okay, right? So these are the ways that we can think about what to integrate. And lastly, I wanted to talk about this gift of owning and integrating. What are the possible positive outcomes of this really deep and hard work? And I've seen this time and time again in my own experience with clients. I will speak for myself as a client. I have seen, I've been in therapy for over 10 years myself, in and out of therapy, in different seasons of life that required it, that needed it, whether it's individual therapy, couples therapy with my husband. But when we have the courage to uncover the things sitting under various rocks, right? When we are willing to look at, oh, wow, there's this thing that I just have never been able to speak out loud to someone else. All of this, these are possible, amazing outcomes. We might be fueled less by fear and anxiety. We have this increased capacity to hold tension, an increased capacity to be accepting of ourselves and others. And I'll speak, one of the things I share is truly the greatest gift of having gone through my own work and continuing to being a therapist in the marriage and family therapy field. We talk a lot about the self of the therapist. I know I have a number of students here, and thank you for being here. But the work that we do in our own lives, the work that we do to grow and move toward healing and intergenerational wholeness. There was a time in my life where I had so much anxiety, I was prescribed anti-anxiety medication in my 20s. I can say with confidence that I live life now with almost little to no anxiety. It is such a gift of this deep, hard work that I've done for decades now, right? And it continues to play out in my parenting life, my life with my husband, the new things I'm learning about my heritage, being Taiwanese, right? It's ongoing. And so many things that I'm continuing to learn and hold in tension. And so I hope this encourages you. There is not a conversation that I'm afraid to have. And so that in itself is such a gift, right? And so I hope that you'll hold with me this hope, right? This future hope. I'm going to get to that, but like this last question, what do I hope and dream of being freed from? And to go from the start here of these reflection questions, as we think about owning and integrating our whole identities, are there parts of my family story and identity that have been rejected, denied, and dismissed? Is it because of fear, of judgment, other emotions that were difficult to feel? What is my capacity to see the range of strengths and weaknesses in myself, in my family? How was this shaped in me? Where did that come from? What contributes to my own reluctance to look toward this? And how might I reconnect with support, relationships, so that I can move in the direction of doing this work? My hope is that we are not doing this alone. I hope that you have friends, church friends who are here with you at this conference, that you might have these conversations together in the 30-minute spaces there at Princeton, checking in with people that you've come with. But knowing that there might be a shift in your relationships when you are changing and moving with courage toward these conversations, shifts internally will happen, shifts in your relationships will occur. But I hold with you this hope of what do we want to be freed from and dream of? And I leave us reminding us of this Parker Palmer quotation, let us embrace our brokenness as an integral part of life. And two quotations here from beloved friend and colleague Jeannie Park Heard, who is going to speak next. This is from one of her articles, Prayers of Lament. Authentic hope is grounded in reality and is not divorced from suffering. It springs forth when we have grieved and lamented loss. So let us have an authentic hope in Jesus. This verse that many of us love, Jesus said, I have come that they may have life and have it to the full. And I have this emotion here because the fullness of life, all of us there in that room in Princeton, all of us tuning in from around the world, we have this hope for our Asian American community to really live a full life, to do the work that God has called us to do with wholeness, with hope, not pulled down by our grief, our trauma, the lament, but let us do it with whole hearts, with authentic hope, and together. So thank you so much for listening in and tuning in and being present with me. Such an honor to share with you the things that have been on my heart. And let me turn it over to you, David, now.
Thank you for listening to the Dialogues podcast. The Center for Asian American Christianity invites you to join our ongoing conversation on Asian American identity, faith, theology, and ministry through the Dialogues magazine, the Dialogues in Asian American Theology and Ministry Public Gatherings, the annual Mental Health Conference, and the annual Asian American Theology Conference. You can find more information and sign up for our newsletter at caac.ptsem.edu.